The Touchdown City Show is presented by Masters Law Firm, West Virginia's personal injury lawyers, and Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar store near you now, there will be one soon. Coming to you from the Stone Church Studio in St. Albans, West Virginia, this is the Touchdown City Show.
Welcome into the Touchdown City Show, the podcast edition. I'm Anthony Lewis in the studio with Michael Sussman, Derek Bailey, and this is the Touchdown City Show. At the end of September, West Virginia riding high at 4-1. And let me start by asking you guys, who had, and I'll even extend this question to people that you know, who had West Virginia 4-1 going into October?
I most certainly did not. I'll go ahead and jump on that and say that. I did not. Absolutely ecstatic that they're 4-1. It's fantastic. But I did not. And I can't think of anybody. I know one of my brothers, Todd, actually did say that they could beat Pitt, Duquesne, Texas Tech, and TCU. But I think he still had them 3-2. But he did say they could win all four of those. I didn't think they could win. I thought they could. When I saw Pitt play, I knew they could beat Pitt. I didn't think they'd go to TCU and win. So I picked them 5-7 on the season. So I did not have them 4-1 at this point. And that's, you know, congratulations to WU and Coach Brown. They're winning games.
Long story short, no one.
Yeah, not many people had that. Not many people had that.
I didn't hear more than seven. The common thread was 5-7. And you're one win away from that in two conference wins. You're already probably past the last place.
Well, that's what. Yeah, let me say, we were all dead on the money. We knew they weren't finishing 14th in that conference.
Well, yeah, that was a little ridiculous.
Now, everybody knew that.
Well, West Virginia over TCU yesterday, 24-21. Neil Brown is now put together a four-game winning streak, first time in his career. And West Virginia is now 8-5 against TCU and 4-2 down there.
I think it's the first time in his career at WU. I think he had won four in a row at Troy. So let's
at WU.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, like I said, they're winning ball games, and that's what matters. For some reason, WVU and Neil Brown has TCU's number in Fort Worth. For some reason, WVU performs well in Fort Worth, Texas. I think he's won all three trips down there.
Huge win for the program, four in a row. It's been a tiresome four-game winning streak. It hasn't necessarily been fun to watch, but there's a formula. Defense, special teams.
I'll take 15-0 if they're all 3-2. Yeah. I don't care. Just win. Any win's pretty.
Let's start talking about the West Virginia offense. Yesterday, 343 yards with the return of Garrett Green, which he was not slated to start. It came out that, I guess, Nico rolled his ankle in practice late Wednesday, and they had to make the switch. If Garrett was healthy, they were going to have to go with Garrett. And I guess if they were both down, who's the third string?
Lord, I don't even know.
Yeah, I think he's a freshman,
I'd say.
But that's what happened. I guess Nico rolled his ankle. Garrett was strong enough to go. And with the return of Garrett Green, which, you know, let me ask you guys, what did you guys think of his performance last night?
It's the same to me as it's always been. He's a great runner. He's a good athlete. He's a great runner. You know, there's definitely spots for guys like that on the field. He's not a consistent enough passer for me. But I mean, overall, I thought he showed a lot of, like, he was a gamer, and he gutted out a win. That's all that matters.
This is something I think I was wrong about. I undersold the value of the perimeter run game that he presents. And on that 35-yard burst to the end zone, he took off. I think that provides some much-needed explosiveness. And 10 of 21 passing is so-so, but that shot to Horton over the middle was a really nice ball. He shows flashes.
I think here's where we're at with him. He is what he is.
That's everybody. That's the way I've been with him for a year now. Like, you know what he's going to do. He is a good runner. I'm not taking that away from him. But he has to have that threat to pass. If he could start hitting passes consistently, then you have a really good player.
Yeah, I think, you know, he is what he is. And then also, too, what he showed me last night that I was, like, sold, I was buying, was when he was coming off the field early in the game and he was just in the faces of the TCU defensive guys. the entire leading the charge. Usually the quarterback kind of jumps back behind. That to me said this guy is he's fiery and he doesn't care and he's showing some emotion out there. And that's when I was sold. I mean, until then, I was so back and forth on him and Nico. I could kind of see the difference. You know, I could see why Nico was number two. But last night, Garrett Green sold me with just his fiery attitude and his performance last night. He gutted it out.
If they're both injured, though, you're going to need both of them. So they both.
Well, the good news is we have some time off, you know, before
yeah,
we get out
of yes. Yeah.
The rushing game last night, West Virginia, 201 yards on the ground. Green, as you alluded to earlier, showed his wheels, had 80 yards with the 35-yard touchdown. That's what he brings back. You know, mm-hmm. he brings you the ability to pull it down, take it around the corner, move the chains. I think that's what we've been missing through the Pitt game and even through Texas Tech, was the ability to move the chains on the ground when we needed to.
100%. And I think that we all fell in love with saying, just give Donaldson the ball, get him 25 carries, 30 carries. And he hasn't been as sharp since Pitt, as you've mentioned. And you need that. You need to be multiple, especially if you don't have playmakers at wide receiver.
I'd like to see White get a little more run, get a little more involved, because I think he's got some speed and shiftiness, and he's a great change of pace to Donaldson. I would like to see him get a couple more carries moving forward. Of course, he showed some great burst on that outside run. I think they called a defensive hold on that play, called a couple times, but that but yeah, I would like to see him get some more carries, you know, just to give Donaldson a little more rest, as it looks like he may need it.
Well, you know, Jaheim White had 5 carries, 47 yards. That was about a little over nine per carry. It looked to me, again, something's off with Donaldson. I cannot put my finger on it. It's like he runs straight up and down with no, like, there's no urgency to get to the hole. And he doesn't use his pad level well. And that's a coaching thing. You know, he's got all the natural ability. But at a certain point, you've got to coach him to be a solid running back. Right. And we saw it. I saw it in a couple of other games yesterday I watched, where these running backs were just getting their pads lower and blowing through 2 and 3 defenders. He's not doing it. So I think at one point they actually took him out of the game and put Jaheim White in.
Well, he's a north-south runner. So he's going to want to go straight ahead. Some of the plays that they called last night were kind of like down at the goal line. They gave him the ball on kind of a sweep. You don't want to give him the ball on a sweep. You want to get him going north-south, get him ahead of steam going towards the line of scrimmage, and he's big enough just to push forward. They gave him the ball on a 3rd and 1 on a stretch play early in the game going outside. No, you want to run him on 3rd and 1. You want to run him straight ahead. He can push the pile. Just run him straight ahead.
Yeah.
So some of the play calling maybe hurt him a little bit, but he's indecisive to me. He doesn't know. Like, he looks like he waits, and he waits too long, because when you see a hole, you got to hit it. You got to go right then. You can't wait, and he seems indecisive this year.
I think it'd be better out of the eye formation.
That might be a fact, too. He might be better out of the I formation.
Or go twin backs.
Yeah. Hey, bring it on. I'm all for that.
I mean, that's what Rich used to run.
Bring it on. I'm all for it.
Defensively, here's the thing. Well, first of all, two scary situations last night. Trey Lathan, Aubrey Burks. Burks goes out with a neck injury. And what is maybe the least damaging on the defense was his, but it's scary when you see a kid go down, neck brace, the whole deal. That's always scary. And he never really moved his arms, which I didn't care for too much. I like whenever they're talking.
Yeah, when they're moving and alert.
But, you know, he had to stay down there, I guess, for observation. And then, you know, Trey Lathan breaks his leg. And, man, he has been coming on lately. And if you've been watching him.
The thing that got me about that is their fans are booing, thinking he's faking an injury out there.
Yeah, he was.
What are you doing?
You could see it. Even in the live action.
Yeah, you saw it as soon as it happened. You were like, oh, God. I don't know. I don't like it when fans boo.
That's a Christian school.
No, of course.
And it kind of cuts the linebacking core in half. Mm-hmm. That was a two-headed monster with Koba and Lathan. Lathan was going to succeed Lee Koba. He still probably will next year as the heart and soul of this defense, but that's a tough blow. Burks, too, because he was finding his niche more so in the run game.
Mm-hmm.
The defense overall, though, I'll actually talk about the game here a little bit. The defense, I thought, in the first half, They had a coverage bust.
Terrible.
You know, Burks missed a tackle on that long touchdown pass. It's going to happen. Second half, the defense was fantastic. My issue with this defense, though, is would someone please, for the love of God and all the fans, catch an interception. Please. We're begging you, guys. We're begging you to catch one. We had a pick six.
They dropped four, they dropped five last night?
Well, Koepka and Bartlett fought over one.
it was officially four, but Neil Brown post-game drop numbers are not always accurate. I've learned that a couple times.
The one guy, I don't even remember who it was. It was a pass. He dropped a pick six in the third quarter. It was a touchdown. All he had to do was haul it in. Been a nice catch. It was a low pass. It'd have been a nice grab, but it would have been a touchdown if he grabs it. But someone please just pick one of these off for us.
Well, it's on the record. I have been picking on Jordan Leslie the entire season.
I was also going to say this. The defensive line for West Virginia, their front seven's pretty good.
They're pretty good. But I've been picking on that defensive coordinator the entire year. You know, and even Avon, he nicknamed him Dumpster Juice.
Dumpster Juice.
You know what? This defense, now in the first half, they were terrible last night. 300 yards total offense in the first half. But they made, for the first time, it seems like in the Neil Brown era, somebody made some damn adjustments at halftime. They've been making good adjustments, and they shut TCU down in the second half.
TCU had 1 yard in the whole third quarter. They have 1 yard in the third quarter. That's unbelievable. What more can you ask of your defense? You can't say, hey, we need you to hold them to 0 yard.
Well,
that 1 yard.
It reminds me of a few years ago with Dante and Darius, where the defense was, keeping teams to 13, 17, 21.
And you're getting beat.
And we were getting beat because we couldn't score. And that's what I was waiting to happen last night. And we'll get into some of the other BS, the Neil Brown stuff later. But, I do want to just kind of tip my hat to Jordan Leslie. You know, we sit here behind these microphones and we criticize. And the funny thing is a lot of people do it. They do it on Twitter. They do it on social media. And they get on radio shows and talk shows and podcasts and criticize. They don't admit when they're wrong. And so far this year, he's proved me wrong. So kudos to him.
I'll say this about the defense as well. He can't intercept the passes for them. They were in position. They were in position to make plays. That's all you can ask of the defensive staff.
Well, there's been times where they were not in position.
No. But I'm talking about last night specifically. And, like, the improvement that we've seen. Think about from the improvement from the Penn State game. The Penn State receivers were running uncovered. There's at least guys in the vicinity now. There are plays to be made. He has them in positions to make plays. The guys have to make the plays.
Right. You don't mind the aggressive mistakes as much.
Right.
It's when you're sagging 10 yards off your guy and they're running free over the
middle
of the field.
Yeah, or it's third and two and your 10-yard cushions all around the front.
You know, they've given up what, since the Penn State game? 6, 17. Well, 17 to Duquesne, 6. And Duquesne was a bad game for the defense. Let me go ahead and say that. They gave up 17. 6, 13, and 21, and they gave up 0 in the second half last night, so all 21 came in the first half. That's actually pretty solid numbers.
Yeah, especially in today's game.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was the rain delay of Duquesne onward. Maybe the coaching staff got in some guys' ears.
Maybe.
Since then, it's been a different unit.
You know, TCU's running back, the Bailey kid, he's a really good running back. And they held him to 55 yards last night. That defensive front is doing the damn thing.
They're disruptive. They are very. I love the kid from Princeton. I can't think of his name right off the top of my head now. I lose their names like crazy, but I think y'all know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, they
Princeton.
They had 5 sacks last night. Not all of them were defensive line. Some of them were Koba linebackers, but they had 5 sacks. And Chandler that second half, he was running scared back there. He was never really settled. I mean, and honestly, even that strike that he threw across the middle at the end of the first half, guys were in place. They just took the wrong angles on him. But after that, he was pressured and didn't perform well after that. So the defense doing a great job. Chandler Morris, 23 of 41. He was sacked 5 times. So, and Lee Koba, I mean, he had 8 solos. So
he had a sack too, but the sack was kind of forced by Bartlett, if I recall correctly. Bartlett flushed him from the pocket, and Koepka got the sack.
And something we never really talk a lot about is special teams. How about that special blocking two? I think they saw something on film. Did you notice the way they were lined up? They were lined up heavy to the right. When we were looking at it from the back, they were overloaded to the left. But on the right side. There something they saw something because they set that up twice.
That's one thing that I can say that West Virginia's improved on in 2023. We haven't complained about a special teams gaffe all season long, so they're doing something right there because that's improvement. Last year it was a disaster. Well, from 1980 to 2022, it was a disaster of special teams play, and this year the special teams they haven't muffed a punt. They haven't they haven't done anything stupid. Let me knock on wood there, but they haven't done anything. They haven't made a horrible play on special teams, which is
well, they tried.
Which on the last play,
on the last play of the game.
That was close.
I was like, "What are you doing?" I'm literally yelling, "What are you doing? What are you doing?"
I guess you can say the false start last night on the field goal before halftime was a special teams play. But I mean, I can't even believe they saw him move.
I can't believe they called that.
The punter is a stud. He kicks the ball exactly where the coverage is going almost every single time. I think he averaged in the mid 40s, like 46 yards per punt again last night. So that's big time. And those were low kicks too by TCU on the two blocked field goals, which you see a lot of times from 50 plus yards out, but you still got to be there. You got to be fearless, and we got some hands on some footballs.
So last night on social media, I got really beat up.
Did you?
Not that I care, but I actually was shocked that I woke up to that much response to my statement. I don't really have a lot of followers on my personal.
What'd you do?
I don't even remember. What exactly did I say? Oh, I said this West Virginia's team, the West Virginia players continue to win even though they're getting bad coaching, and they are. And Neil, although they're 4-1, there's a lot of bad. And when I say – I used to think there was bad coaching, like technique coaching going on, but now it's in-game coaching.
I don't want to call it bad coaching because we don't see what goes on Sunday to Friday. I want to call it just bad decisions and bad play calling.
It's not even that. I don't even see. To me, the play calling thing gets really elementary when it comes to being critical.
Well, yeah, that's true because you can criticize every single call.
I mean, you can sit back and that's like the goober in the stands that was sitting behind me 2 years ago. That was these play calls. I'm like, all right, but I'm talking about, for instance, last week, not calling the timeouts.
Yeah.
Last night when you are not have been shut down and you don't kick field goals late in the game to move it, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to be aggressive, but as you've already been shut down, kick the field goals.
The fourth and goal, I had no issue with him going for it. I had no issue with him going for that because the defense was playing so stout. If you don't get that, I can see you're going to make them punt from deep in the road territory. I'm fine with that. But I also think that he is – all of a sudden since the Pitt game last year, it seems like he hadn't ran into a fourth down that he won't go for now. I think I'll show you guys. But no, I don't understand some of the decisions made myself on these fourth downs. You can't continue to leave points on the field. It's going to get exposed. Like last night, we were lucky. If he kicks those field goals, I mean, West Virginia wins that game 30-21, and it's never, it's
never
doesn't come down to anything else. Now, granted, we don't know if they make the field goals or not. The one they would have made, it was a chip shot when Donaldson got stuffed on fourth and goal, but you don't know. I mean, I do not like leaving points on the field in certain opportunities, and last night with the way the defense was playing, I felt like he should have kicked a couple more field goals.
I was all right with going for it. I hated the play call. It was one of those everybody in the stadium knows where it's
going. The fourth and goal, I'm fine with. I don't care that he went for that. It's the other fourth down when we were in field goal range that he went for that I was not happy with.
Yeah, that one, I would have kicked both of them, actually.
I would have just kicked the first one.
But even though, and man, I really the kicker was put in a bad position there at the end of the first half with the false start, moved him back 5 yards because he made it. And then they called the false start. But, I guess I'm being nitpicky, but – but here's my point. It's every week. It's something.
Yeah.
It's something that can cost you a game.
That's why I don't think it's nitpicky. Every fan base. Let me say this. Every fan base is the same. Alabama at Nick Saban. When Alabama fans watch that game, Nick Saban is under the microscope. They're going to complain about something. It's the way it is. That's why. Everybody sits down and they watch these games. Some people watch them 6, 7, 8 times, and they're like, "Why did we do this here? And why did we do that there?" But when you see mistakes made every week, it makes you wonder. And he has done this several times, not taking points when they're presented to you. Like, you can kick a field goal. It's all right to kick a field goal. It was all right to not go for it at Pitt. You felt like your defense was going to hold up. That's fine. You're the head coach. You make the decisions. But sometimes I do feel like, man, that is just seems like a so such a bad decision. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And maybe, you know, I don't know, he's an analytical guy. Maybe the analytics say, well, we're going to go for it in this situation, and that's what he's going with.
You're only up three, and you're risking a busted coverage,
a cramp,
anything, and they hit a long strike, and you're losing with less than a minute. Yeah. So that's my point. Yeah. But it's not even just last night. Texas Tech.
The late game situation against Texas Tech was bad.
And then we could probably go all the way back to the beginning of his days here. And those are the things I'm being critical about.
You put it perfectly. It becomes tiresome. You win in spite of them.
The Baylor game, his very first year, remember they lost 17-14, and they did something boneheaded right before they kicked a field goal. I can't remember what it was, but they got beat 17-14. It was on Halloween night in 2019. They did something at Baylor. It was in Waco. It was a close game. It was 17-14 final, and they did something right before that, and we all looked at each other in the room and was like, what is that?
Does he get nervous? Is it like a gun shy thing? Coaches get tight too.
I want to know if he like. I think that these coaches, and I think they're all the same. Like, we have Brown under the microscope because we're West Virginia fans. Like, all Mountaineer fans are looking at him like, you know, what's he doing here? What's he thinking here? What's he thinking there? I think these coaches like think they're going to fool somebody sometimes. Like the rollout pass on 3rd-and-1. Why run that?
Yeah.
Give the ball to the horse and get out of his way.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was like. Not only that, but you stop the clock. You stop the clock. Again, these are the things I'm being critical about. It's not the – I think they've done a great job coaching up the talent that they have.
And yes, and kudos. Let me say kudos to the coaching staff. Like, you are 4-1. That's phenomenal. Like, great job. Outstanding. But there's still decisions being made that are not helping, in my opinion.
Yeah. You're coming out on the better end of a bad decision.
Right.
And it's being covered up for.
At some point, somebody's going to take advantage of your poor decision. That's the thing I'm worried about.
Well, here's the deal. Last night, Sonny Dykes did a worse job coaching than Neil Brown. His coaching decisions left me going, he's helping us out here.
Well, it's like the Texas Tech coach. He keeps going for it on 4th down. It's 4th-and-4 from his own 27. I'm going for it. I don't care.
I mean, it was crazy. So let me ask you, we're 4-1. Are we being too negative? Or should we be happy that we're 4-1?
I think we've kept the tone pretty responsibly in check. It is not time to say that the Mountaineers are going to win 8 or 9 games or win the conference. It's 4-1. It's a positive sign, but there's just not enough playmakers on this team to get excited yet.
It's exciting to be 4-1, but both things can be true. You can be excited to be 4-1, but you can also be concerned at decisions that are being made week to week. Being 4-1 is awesome. Like nobody, like I said, I didn't have West Virginia 4-1 at this point. I'm absolutely thrilled that they're 4-1. But it's also, you know, it's also reasonable to think, well, that play, these decisions could eventually catch up to you against, you know, Oklahoma, against Oklahoma State, against Baylor. Baylor comes back from 28 yesterday. You know, you can lose to, there's, what, 7 games left. West Virginia could win all 7. West Virginia could lose all 7. They're playing close games. It's the way it is. These games, like when you're coming down to several snaps, say a handful of snaps, those 4 or 5 snaps, those decisions can beat you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's like I said, you can be excited to be 4-1, but you can also show concern and have things that you see that like, hey, that might catch up to us later.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not really complaining about some of the play calling, because we're going to be vanilla all year. What you've seen in 5 games is what you're getting for the rest of the year. So if you don't like it, I just wouldn't tune in on Saturdays.
I like the vanilla because the run game is strong, and that's how you protect your defense. I don't care. Time of possession last night was about 34 minutes to 26.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. In my opinion, that's how you win. It's the concerns that I see are like the throwing with 3 minutes left and the team has timeouts and you're just out there chucking it around. Like, yeah, I mean, that's what concerns me.
Does the vanilla become a problem if you have to score 35 points to win a football game and you're still putting up high school passing?
That's the thing. What they do is they drag you into the mud. What they do is with this running game, they play defense and they control the clock and they drag you into the mud. They don't want to play. They trick you into playing their game. And that's what's going to happen the rest of the season.
And that's why I credit the coaching staff, is because they want that game to be, and you're talking about how boring and ugly it is. That's what they want, and that's good, because at least they have a style that they know to play, and maybe they'll form that more of an identity and continue to run the ball moving forward, because that's the strength of the team.
That's what Dana did the year they won 10 games.
You just make, hey, the ugly, I don't care. I'll take, like I said, I'll take 3-2 wins. I don't care how ugly they are. Just win games, and that's what they're doing. So I'm going to credit them, but I still see some issues that could possibly cost them in these close games.
I agree. Hey, for the podcast listeners, I want to invite you to check out the radio broadcasts. Don't forget, we'll be doing the Alumni Hall Trivia Question of the Week. The phone number for that is 304-9696-TDC or 304-969-6832. Listen for that on the radio broadcast, and we'll post that on Tuesday. Last week, somebody won from South Carolina. I can't remember what the guy's name was, but the trivia question was who did West Virginia play in the Blue Bonnet Bowl? And or what bowl did West Virginia play TCU in?
It was the Blue Bonnet Bowl
in 1984. So listen for that on the radio broadcast. Couple of news and notes from the week. Chuck Howley, West Virginia great, the only person to ever win the MVP in a Super Bowl on the losing team for the Dallas Cowboys. He'll get his number retired. When are they doing that? BYU, Oklahoma State. I forgot to read that part. Anyway, it's coming up. So people were upset. They're like, well, what took so long? The prerequisite for getting your number retired is you have to be a part of a major Hall of Fame. You have to be in the NFL or College Football Hall of Fame before they will retire your number at West Virginia.
What's the probationary period for the Hall of Fame?
I think 10 years.
10 years. Okay, so Pat White is under consideration soon.
He should be. So he would probably be one that would probably get into the College Football Hall of Fame. I would say, considering he was one of the first quarterbacks ever to win 4 bowl games. He was the all-time leading rusher and still is in my book.
Yeah, he had that record for a little while.
Well,
Denard Robinson broke it, but he broke it kind of playing running back his senior year at Michigan.
Yeah, so if you take his running back stats out, it doesn't count. It was really kind of messed up the way they did it. It was like a train heist, almost the same the way they robbed Kevin Jones, the Big East Player of the Year that year. But anyway, but you have to be in a major Hall of Fame. He just got into the NFL Hall of Fame, which made him eligible, and they rushed it because he's obviously not doing well. Probably won't even be at the ceremony. He wasn't at the Hall of Fame ceremony. You know, he was probably about 10 years overdue getting into the NFL Hall of Fame.
That's the bad thing about the NFL Hall of Fame. I think they only take like 7 a year. Mm-hmm. Don't they only take 7? And it's so hard. I mean, you got what? Tackle, guard, center, 3, running back, fullback, mm-hmm. wide receiver, tight end. That's 7 positions just on offense. Then you have probably 6 or 7 on defense. You have your special teams. I mean, it's hard to get in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Well, and then on the other side of that, like Mark Bulger was just nominated. So what that means is he's now on the list to receive votes. Will he make it? Who knows? But he's on the list to be nominated. So just getting that far would be
an honor. That's an honor, yeah.
You know, so they'll do that. And, you know, Chuck Howley, one of the greats, he's from here in West Virginia. Now I feel ignorant because I've blanked out on where he's from. But let me ask you this. Yesterday I was watching the Colorado-USC game, and the Fox announcers say, this Colorado team has to be the favorite to win the Big 12 next year.
That's absurd. Are they going to get 2 fronts that are good enough to do that in 1 year?
I mean, they could, but...
Because that's the problem. They have some skill. I mean, with Travis Hunter out, that's a 2-side-of-the-ball game changer. I don't want to act like that hasn't made them much worse, but they're not going to do that in a year.
Am I mistaken? Does Utah come to the Big 12 next year?
Yes.
Utah has a better shot to win the Big 12 next year than Colorado.
They were horrible the other night.
I'm not disagreeing, but they're playing with their backup quarterback in a tough place to play. Oregon State's a tough place to play. They beat USC up there several times when USC was on that great run they had. Utah is better than Colorado. I would make the argument right now, if you want to say Colorado is the favorite to win the league, that means that you're just going in and you're going to assume that they're better than Texas Tech, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, BYU, Central Florida, Houston. They're better than Houston. Let me go ahead and throw that out there. Iowa State might be pretty good next year. I think Iowa State's well coached. That guy probably should have left a long time ago. It's another story. But, you know, they're going to have a harder time than people think in the Big 12. Ask the newcomers. Ask the newcomers to Big 12 football.
It never works that way. I think that was just them selling the hype. You know, the hype train, the Deion thing.
Let me go ahead and say, they very well may win the Big 12. I don't know, but like on paper right now, they give up how many sacks a game?
Yeah.
Those guys aren't just going to magically be better. I mean, they'll be better. They're not going to be magically be All-Americans next year.
Yeah, I just thought that was an interesting comment. I kind of laughed because, you know, obviously we are seeing what Colorado is, and we kind of knew they might be a 5 or 6 win team, but the hype is kind of driving me nuts. But then these commentators come out and say that, and I was like, guys, give it a rest.
They're going to fit right in. They've won a game 43-35. They've lost a game 48-41. Bring them on in. That's Big 12 football at its finest.
All right, let's look ahead. West Virginia sitting at 4-1. Let's just look at the month of October. Okay, West Virginia goes to Houston. They play a very bad Oklahoma State at home. Then they go to Central Florida. They go to the bounce house. So let's break it down into months now. We got through the gauntlet. The September was the gauntlet for West Virginia.
Yeah, because that was Penn State, Pitt, and Texas Tech, and TCU.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's look at the next three games. I mean, Houston, I mean, I don't think that's going to be as – West Virginia should handle them, but I think it's probably going to be a little closer.
This is the one we've all been waiting for, Neil Brown versus Dana Holgorsen. He's drawing up plays right now. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's going to be ready. He's going to have something for us.
Dana wants to win 87-86. Neil wants to win 4-3.
And situation here, you're winning in spite of Neil Brown. Dana Holgorsen has a clear skill set as one of the best play callers in America.
Let me also say, though, Houston's the worst team in the Big 12. They're the worst team in the Big 12. I completely believe that. Texas Tech stomped them yesterday, 49-28. They've also lost to somebody the week before. I can't even remember who it was. Somebody else got them pretty good the week before. The TCU. TCU beat them 36-13. Might have been 2 weeks from yesterday. I don't know, but TCU beat them handily as well. I think that Houston is the worst team in the Big 12. I don't think it'll be a walkover because they're going to have a bye week as well to prepare. And this is one of those games where these decisions of, oh, well, I'm going to go for it on this fourth down. Well, coverage bust and you're behind because they can score points. They just have a hard time stopping teams.
I think so, this is where West Virginia, the old, you know, Dana Holgorsen's teams used to get beat up pretty good. If they were playing against physical teams, they didn't match up well. So I think this is where we're going to get it.
I'm going to make this statement, too. I think if West Virginia beats them, Dana Holgorsen might get fired on Friday.
Ooh, man. Not even going to give him a shot to go to the Big 12. Then you got Oklahoma State, who's not doing very well. I think Gundy's out of there at the end of the season.
Come back home for that one. Hopefully you win those. Hopefully you beat Houston, so there's still a good turnout. Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma State's been terrible this year. I don't know if it's Gundy's last season, but that'll be another toss-up game.
He's another coach that stayed too long at one place. I think he's a good coach, but I think it's just time for him to move on from Oklahoma State. I mean, I know that's his alma mater. It's a tough thing, but they have not been good the last 2 years now, and he appears to be a coach that's kind of maybe burnt on the way college football has gone with all the money involved and everything, and it looks like he may be on his way out. But that's another, like I said, that's another winnable game.
That's a shame. He has the greatest post-game press conference of all time.
You think that's the greatest?
Well, I don't know. Chaney, whenever he threatened
Calipari's ass.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was a good one.
You don't remember that one.
John Calipari and John Chaney, they played when they were in the Atlantic 10, and something happened during the game, and John Chaney in the press conference, they were like jawing at each other, and John Chaney said, "I'll whoop your ass," to John Calipari.
For some reason, Calipari showed up, and he showed up too early for his presser and just set Chaney off. They had to hold him back. It was great.
The Jim Mora one always resonates with me.
Yeah,
there's been some playoffs.
Yeah.
But Gundy's is up there. It's a quotable one. It's always 40. Quotable. Yeah.
I'm a man.
That's been 16 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a young Gundy back then. And then you go to Central Florida, man, and a lot of people think that West Virginia's not going to win that one. They're setting it up for us, though, man. It's their homecoming. It's sold out.
I just don't believe in Central Florida still. I'll tell you what. I flipped the Baylor game on yesterday. It was Baylor-Central Florida, and they were wailing on Central or Baylor. It was like 35-7. I turned it off. I brought up my scoreboard about an hour later. It was 35-26. I was like, crap, I turn it back, and then Central Florida fumbles. Baylor picks it up and runs it back for a touchdown. I was like, oh, my God, it's 35-33, and there's like 6 minutes left. I don't trust Central Florida. They're 0-2 in the conference as well. Here it is. Central Florida's 0-2. Houston's 0-2. Cincinnati's 1-1. Or, I'm sorry, Cincinnati's 0-2. BYU's 1-1. You know who BYU beat? Cincinnati on Friday night.
That's right. They played Friday night. Well, listen, man, the schedule's set up for West Virginia to make a run. Here we're sitting at 4-1. We're off this week. So, you know, next week we'll probably just kind of be goofing around in here talking about whatever, but who knows. But
somebody will get upset next Saturday.
Yeah, but, man, this team, it's crazy to think this team has a shot to be 7-1 at the end of October.
And Oklahoma's 11-11. I'm sorry. I thought I was trying to think if it was 11-4. But we'll just talk about October. Never mind.
Yeah, I mean, we're just looking at October. Then you're looking at, you know, when you break down your seasons, you break them down in the months. And, of course, you're supposed to go week to week. But you look at the months, and this team could go 3-0 this month.
Absolutely.
Actually, 7-1.
Let me say, they should. Well, I'm not going to say should, because at Central Florida, it might be a tougher game. They should definitely go get through this 2-1.
Yeah, I agree. All right, for the listeners, thank you guys so much for checking us out this week. And don't forget, swing by touchdowncity.com to find us on your favorite podcast platform and also all of our social media outlets. You can also pick up shirts from Alumni Hall from that link. Then head over to our website. You can get a Touchdown City shirt. For the guys here in the Full Court or the Touchdown City, I'm thinking Full Court Press because we're already getting ready for that.
We're getting ready. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
That's all we got to say.
So for the listeners, we do a basketball version of this. It's us three, and we have a fourth person coming in. Avon steps aside, and we're going to be adding somebody for that. So go find that on social media. It's called Full Court Press, and we'll have some news breaking here probably in the next week or two about that. Some exciting stuff. But for the guys here for the Touchdown City show, thanks for listening.
Visit our new website at touchdowncity.com. The Touchdown City Show is produced by Anthony Lewis in partnership with HD Media, the Charleston Gazette-Mail.